Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo!
It's Vinny Pimigal.
And tonight we have on the show a guest who's working on a movie. I'm not sure if it's done yet. We'll have to ask him, but a movie about Lou Duva. His name is John Edmonds Cosma. And we interviewed Lou Duva, or reviewed the interview today, actually, way back when. Seems like now, at least a year ago, I think.
It was a year and a half ago. I figured we made our first contact with the Mariana family in June of 09. And it was a great event that it was then I started watching the Martian contact interviews. That's when we first got into the Keith Sylvester for the first time. That interview, that was the first time. And that's when we got new people on the show. And Lou, I mean, he's a man, 82 years old now. Off the fat. I remember bringing up one fight that, I forget who it was, maybe the whole fight was there, maybe, Whitaker, I don't remember. But the thing was like, Lou's like, no, you got the scoring wrong. And I was like, oh shit, I looked it up on Boxer, and he remembered the actual scores of the fight. I was like, damn, that's good. For all the major title fights that this guy's worked corners up, he can remember the scores of like almost all the fights. I was like, that was amazing, and especially he was 87 years old at the time.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of that interview was when he talked about the Joe Louis fight with Rocky Marciano and how both guys were crying in the locker room. And usually when you read the story in a book or whatever, it's somebody that wasn't actually there, and they'll tell you just Rocky cried. He didn't want to fight him in the first place, but he knew he had to. But, the way Lou tells it, both guys are crying. Joe came in and thanked him and all that, And
that was really sad. I mean, Rocky didn't want to take a fight. I mean, he had to because it was his way to get, a title shot. And he had so much respect for Joe Louis. And Joe asked him, like, I need this fight, man. I need it. And I think, looking back, I think Joe knew, he had to, that he was at the end. And I think he knew that his chances of actually winning were, slim. But he needed that fight for, the money. He was really in
you know, debt to the IRS. And that's a shame, the way the IRS really, you know, abused Joe Lewis at the end. I mean, Joe Lewis, basically, when this country was really struggling and, you know, it was right after the Great Depression, and then you had the fear of, you know, Nazi superiority because the Germans are really trying to push it. And when Joe stepped in that ring against Max Schmeling, he wasn't, you know, a black man. He was, you know, he was an American. That's what he was. There was no skin color there. I mean, he was a representation of the red, white, and blue. And by destroying Schmeling like that, I mean, he really stuck it to, you know, Nazi Germany. And he, you know, he gave a lot of the Americans hope. And it showed, you know, Hitler that his Aryan supremacy was not all that supreme. And that was really kicking Hitler's teeth, by the way. And then, you know, Joe Lewis serving, you know, in the U.S. Army, you know, doing all stuff for the troops. I mean, they said there were times that he would go to different camps where the guys were, and he would always get in the ring and, like, you know, do a workout and a sparring session. And there were some days he was so exhausted that he could barely walk up, you know, the steps. And I remember reading where some of his, like, handlers were like, Joe, you don't have to give him a show today. You don't have to get in there and do an exhibition or spar or work out. Just get in there and wave to the guys. These guys are going to be thrilled to see you. And Joe's like, no, I have to give the guys a show. They deserve it. And that just shows you the kind of high character guy that Joe Lewis was. And then, you know, to be so broke like that and the IRS hounding him, where at the end of his career, he's taking part in wrestling matches and being a greeter in Las Vegas up until the time he died. It's just really one of the sad stories of American history.
Yeah, and we do have to blame the Kennedys for that one.
Well, I think there was a lot of problems even before the Kennedys with that, honestly.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we got a great guest on tonight. We'll have to ask him more about Lou and his life and times. I'm sure he probably knows a lot more than we got out.
Yeah, in one of his movies.
Yeah, he's...
better in the silver screen?
There's, I don't know. I don't know what, if it's going to be a TV movie or what the story is.
It doesn't matter to me.
I didn't really review much about him before the show, unfortunately. But, you know, we'll get him on. I'll actually I'm gonna have to find this email to a little bit more information about him. Here we are. He's a Hollywood producer, director, actor, cinematographer, and founder of Bang Productions.
Where do I sign up?
It's a documentary, actually. It's not a movie.
Okay.
It's,
if he needs some people, you know what? Maybe he needs me to be interviewed for his movie. He does. First of all, because I'm the boxing rain man for number one, and I would be very interesting. And number two, I could tell him when I met Lou Duva when I was 15 at a pay-per-view fight card in Atlantic City. And we were asking him why he let Meltzer Taylor fight Terry Norris and get beat like that. And he wouldn't answer us. He pretended like he couldn't hear us.
Great. Well, we got a lot of other news to talk about. There's actually a lot of movies going on with boxing lately. Brings to mind the old boxing dead talk and puts it to rest, I think. You know, you got Mark Wahlberg out there with The Fighter about Mickey Ward, who I've met multiple times in person. Last time was at the Battle of the Badges show there, which they're going to be doing another one that I'm hopefully going to be fighting in. I'm working on it now, April 23rd in 2011. They're going to have it in Massachusetts again at a place in Pembroke this time instead of South Boston. So look out for that. We're going to be marketing that over the next couple months. But, yeah, Mickey Ward is the subject of that movie. Then we get Eminem is going to be starring in a movie called Southpaw about a Southpaw boxer. And they just put that story out that he's going to be doing that. And it's a little bit autobiographical for him because not because he was a boxer, but because he has a daughter in the movie, just like he has in real life, that he doesn't see that often. There's a bunch of other stuff that they took from his real life, but Yeah, he doesn't have any boxing experience as far as I know. So it's going to be interesting to see him try.
I used to actually kind of like Eminem, but he's just grated on my nerves so bad that, I mean, I hate the way, you know, he plays like this, you know, bad boy role, and, you know, he walks around, you know, like talks all this trash, like he's this and he's that. I used to like some of his stuff, but, I mean, I actually can't listen to him anymore. As soon as I hear him on the radio, I just shut him off, personally. It's always, you know, he like, talks trash, he's a badass, but until you prove it to me, shut up.
And one thing I was telling you before we got on the air, I read a story the other day about the fighter and Mark Wahlberg's preparation for it. And he spent over $500,000, which he said is more than he even got paid for the movie, on training expenses just to be ready for this part. And, you know, apparently he had personal trainers flying all over the country with him and, you know, just got really into the part so that it would come out you know, good enough on TV.
I'm going to say a few things I've, you know, read about Mark Wahlberg and I've heard about Mark Wahlberg. Very high character guy. A few years ago, he had a film where he filmed a lot of it in Philadelphia. This was actually done by the same casting company that had done Rocky Balboa. Because when I went down there to audition for Rocky, they had given out some of the sheets, and some of the sheets they had was info for this movie called Invincible, where he played the Vince Papale, who was a played for the Philadelphia Eagles for 3 years. And what was interesting about Vince Papale is he was a bartender and a school teacher, and you know he had run track in high school. I mean, they doctored the movie up a little bit, but he was basically just a guy from Philadelphia, season ticket holder in the cheap seats, who ended up trying out for the team and making it. And so they were doing a movie about it. And of course, so they doctored it up just a little bit. Ended up still being a very good movie. Well, Mark Wahlberg had the lead role as Vince Papale. And they said he was so into playing that role. You know, he was, you know, training with Vince Papale. He was hanging out with them. They said he really got in shape, and he refused to use a stunt double in any of the football scenes. They said, like, there was one time, like, he was running down the sidelines, and one of the extras, who was supposed to be, like, a player for the New York Giants, absolutely clobbered him out of bounds. And he got up, and, like, and the first of all, they all thought he was, like, out cold. He popped up, and he's like, yeah, I'm okay. And they're like, we know he wasn't. There's no way he could have been okay. But he popped up, and he really put a lot of intensity to it. And in an interview with Vince, the real Vince Papale, he said, he goes, I could not have asked for anybody better to play my part than Mark Wahlberg. And I'm sure that he is going to bring that same character and that same intensity and that same class to playing Mickey Ward. Mickey Ward was a fighter, never the best, never a world champion. I think he won a minor title in his career, maybe like an IBU or something like that. But he was a guy that went out there, he gave you balls to the wall every time. Didn't always win them, but he came out there, and a lot of his fights were so damn good because he was out there, he would draw the line in the ring, and he was willing to stand there, and he was hoping you would stand there on the other side and see who fell first. A lot of times guys didn't stand on the other side, and they'd use their superior speed and athleticism and just outpointed them. But like I said, Mickey was a guy, didn't have the best record, wasn't your classic Oscar De La Hoya or Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao type fighter. He was a blue collar, bringing a lunch bucket, and you know, let's sit down and let's go to work type of guy. And that's a guy you got to respect in there, and I'm looking forward to seeing this movie.
Yeah, I haven't been able to download it yet for free, but I'm working on it. it's one of those other perks of knowing the internet. Get to see the movies before they come out on even DVD, if you know what you're doing. But it's been a tough one to get because I guess they've been delaying it. It's been out. I mean, it's been done in the can for a while, but they've just been delaying the release forever, and they just barely got it out before the end of the year here. There's just all kinds of problems with the movie. There was like 5 different directors and I don't know, I just heard a bunch of stuff about how difficult this movie was to make. And then you've mentioned, of course, that they don't even have Arturo Gatti in there. It's kind of unfortunate.
That was a criticism of it. And part of it, they wanted the climactic fight to be a fight with Shane Neary, which happened a few years before he tussled with Gatti. You know, Shane Neary, I believe he was in that fight, and he came back and stopped Neary in the eighth round, who was a highly talented prospect. So, of course, they want to end the movie on, you know, the high note of, you know, winning this fight. I think it was for, like, I don't have the box track in front of me, but that was for, like, an IBU title. It definitely wasn't a world championship per se, WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, but it was for at least a title. Maybe it was WBU. I don't remember. But that was the thing. I mean, they wanted to end it just on that note. And the other reason that is more speculation than anything, maybe they didn't want to, you know, bring in the Gatti character only recently after his death. And, maybe put a downer on it, or I'm not sure. But I really, really would have, hard for me to say because I haven't seen the movie yet, but I definitely think I would have much rather enjoyed seeing the trilogy with Gatti on there. And I'll never forget being alive for the third fight, and they were getting ready for the 10th round, and Michael Buffer saying, "This is the 10th? No, this is the 30th and final round." And the guys hugged before they went out for the 10th round. And that was just, you know, pretty amazing to me, and I wish that would have been, you know, included in the movie.
Well, can't go back now. I guess they'll have to wait for the sequel, if there is one. But,
yeah, we'll make a sequel, right?
Moving on, we have some news about Manny Pacquiao. He's decided now he's going to name his next opponent during his 32nd birthday celebration in General Santos City tomorrow. So we'll know tomorrow who he's going to fight next. The candidates are Sugar Shane Mosley, Juan Manuel Marquez, and Andre Berto. I think it's going to be Berto for some reason. I don't know. I don't have any logic behind it. I just think. I just think that's the best choice.
That, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. Berto looked good in his left foot in HBO. Like, granted, he wasn't up to the best par out there, but looked very good in one-round knockout. Berto has struggled against Luis Collazo bad. A lot of people thought Collazo won that fight. And what bodes bad for Berto is Collazo being a southpaw like Pacquiao. But Berto would be interesting. Mosley's getting up there in age. Obviously, after that second round against Mayweather, he didn't look too good. And Mosley's the type of guy, when he's in a fight where there's a lot of pressure on him, first of all, I thought he lost that rematch with Oscar De La Hoya because he was doing the same things that he did in the Mayweather fight and that he did in the fights with Winky Wright and Vernon Forrest. Is when Mosley is struggling and he's having trouble pulling the trigger, he sits there and he almost like he's like shaking, and he rolls his hands a lot, and he's bouncing, and he's expending a lot of energy, but he's not throwing any punches. And I remember scoring the fight, his rematch with De La Hoya, watching it again and scoring it. And I did have De La Hoya win, and Mosley came on late and made it closer than the early rounds were. But I said the only thing that might have swayed some judges when Mosley was doing all that extra movement. And that, what I call sizzle, more sizzles than steak, he just looked flashier and he, you know, was more stylish where De La Hoya was. And I'm like, I think the judges might have given him points just for looking flashier out there.
Right.
But Mosley definitely has lost a notch. The Mayweather fight kind of proved that. And then the fight with Sergio Mora, who 7 or 8 years ago, Mosley would have had for lunch, dinner, and the dessert. And he struggled more bad
because
he was offense down.
Two out of the three there that are the options who already fought Mayweather, so it's going to be interesting to see who he picks just because of that, because then you'll be able to compare his performance to how Mayweather did against him, even though that's not really a perfect indicator, especially since they're fighting at different times. It's a good, sort of a good yardstick for him. to decide whether it's going to be a good fight against Mayweather and Pacquiao if they ever make it. Of course, Freddie Roach thinks it's not going to happen, but you know, they're still going to talk about it until it does.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got a whole lot of other news to cover before we get John Cosmo on in 10 minutes here. First of all, I wanted to just go over the UFC 124 events this last weekend. We had the main event, George St. Pierre versus Josh Koscheck, and it was the only one I got right in my preview, even though I said it wasn't going to get to the fourth round. We went all five rounds, and George St. Pierre won by decision. Pretty much demolished Koscheck, broke his orbital bone, screwed up his eye real bad. He couldn't even fly out of Montreal. He had to drive through Boston to get out. Then we had Stefan Struve beat Sean McCorkle by TKO in the first round. Jim Miller beat Charles Oliveira, who was undefeated before this fight, beat him by submission in the knee bar in the first round. And we had another fight that I got wrong. Mack Danzig beat Joe Stevenson by knockout. It's one of the best knockouts of the year, really, in MMA. I mean, I didn't expect much from Mack Danzig. And he went out there against a guy who's been around and just popped him right on the chin and put him down for good. Out cold. And we had Thiago Alves beat a friend of mine, John Howard. Not really. We're not really friends, but I met him before down in Boston, and we had him on the show once before. I was hoping for him to win. I predicted he would win. He lost the unanimous decision to Thiago Alves. Dan Miller had a split decision win over Joe Dirksen. Mark Bocek beat Dustin Hazlett by submission, triangle choke. Rafael Natal had a draw with Jesse Bongfelt. Then we had Sean Pearson beat Matt Riddle by decision. It was interesting because this fight was the one that Dana White said he would have picked as fight of the night. And he had the fans vote instead this time. And the fans voted for the main event, George St. Pierre versus Josh Koscheck, which really wasn't competitive. So he said, that's it. No more fan voting for the fight of the night. You know, which is kind of brings home that whole point that I've been trying to make, that the bonus system is really messed up, you know, that they give certain people bonuses and other people don't get them. And here you have them putting it to the fans to vote for something like that, which can substantially affect the guy's payday. And Sean Pearson and Matt Riddle are guys that really need the money. They're not big names. They're not getting the huge cash bonuses or just paydays, period, for the fight, you know, without the bonus that guys like George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck are getting just for their names. But speaking of Pearson, it was kind of a funny story that came out today that he's been dismissed from his chance to be in the Toronto Police Department because, number one, I guess they're concerned about him spending too much time getting ready for fights and training for fights. And the other thing is his nickname used to be Pimp Daddy. Sean Pimp Daddy Pearson. So they don't like the, I guess, the connotation of that. And they don't want him to be a police officer because of that up in Toronto, which is kind of a funny story. But he says, you know, I got a wife and two kids now. I just did that when I was 23. That's not even my nickname anymore. But they still said no thanks, so you can't be a cop. So let that be a warning to you. Pick a good nickname if you're going to fight. Also on the UFC 124 card, we had Ricardo Almeida won a unanimous decision over TJ Grant, and John McAdessi beats Pat Oddenwood by decision, also unanimous. And that's pretty much it. The next big UFC event is going to be New Year's Day, I believe, or New Year's Eve. We'll talk about that when we get closer to it. And the last WEC event is actually tonight. So those guys are all going to go over to the UFC. It's going to merge, and the WEC is going to be no more after tonight. The last hurrah. And other than that, there's not really much going on. They had the that big tournament in boxing over the weekend. Darchinian.
There were two cards over this weekend. And a card on Showtime. And at Showtime, we had two decisions. We had Adam Marez had a close decision win over Victor Chinian. Victor Chinian, a lot of guys are finally able to figure him out, and now that he's moved up in weight, he isn't as potent as a puncher as he once was. You had that. Then you also had Joseph Abeko gaining revenge on Yanni Perez, winning a 12-round decision. I didn't get to see much of those fights. I was, by the time I got home from working and then stopping over my friend's house, I got home just in time to catch part of the HBO card, which I'm glad I did. We had, first fight of the night was a close draw between Victor Ortiz and Lamont Peterson. I think it was Lamont Peterson. I get Lamont and Anthony confused with them. I think it was Lamont Peterson. That was a 10-round draw, but the main event was something of legends. And if you want to get more people to be boxing fans, that's the way to go, baby. We had Amir Khan and Marcos Maidana. And Rich, if you remember my quotes on the fight last week, I said this is a fight that Khan's speed, skill, and just general boxing superiority should carry him to a decision win. But, and I said it was a big but, if Maidana, who's a heavy-handed puncher, could catch him on what is Khan's suspect chin, but things could turn around in a heartbeat. First round, Khan was boxing his ears off, knocked him down with a hard body shot. It was over right there. And then for the first few rounds, Khan was just, looked like a paintbrush and a board. He was just stroking him all over the place. And then Maidana just kept coming in. He was slower, but he was just putting consistent pressure on. He was starting to land short little uppercuts. And then he was landing some overhand rights. And you could see where, Khan was getting a little bit nervous. So, he shook him a few times. What really hurt Maidana was when he, was in a clinch. And he spun out with a back elbow. And he ended up elbowing the referee, Joe Cortez, right in the gut. he aimed it at Khan's head. But he ended up catching Cortez. So, he got penalized a point right there. But the second half of the fight, Maidana really picked it up, and he started landing some shots on Khan. Hit him with a right hand in the 10th round that almost put him down and through the ropes. And how Khan survived, I don't know. But all the judges gave him a 10-8 round because he beat him so bad. That one-point deduction for the elbow cost him on one card, which he lost by a point, and the other two cards, I think he lost by 2 points. So it was a close, unanimous decision for Khan. And I don't know if he wants any more Marcos Maidana. He was lucky to get out of that fight, with his record intact.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, here's an interesting fight. I just seen on BoxRec happening tomorrow. An 8-round welterweight fight between Steve Forbes of Contender fame, 34-8, 10 knockouts, fighting Roberto Valenzuela. Get this for a record, 55-55. With two draws, 45 knockouts, 27 knockout losses. It's a heck of a record. We also have the mismatch of the week maybe on here. Edward Ochoa, 10-1 at welterweight, fighting Eric Draper, 1-4. And that's pretty interesting. Just wanted to mention that. I think we got the big... Pascal Hopkins fight this weekend, too.
You're completely right. The hard fight to predict. I'm going to tell you what. The fact that it's in Canada. It's in basically Pascal's backyard. He's very popular up in, in Canada where the fight, the fight sold out immediately. The only reason Hopkins has really taken his fight up there is I was reading an article with him in the Philadelphia Daily News the other day where he was about
shit, it's been about 15 years now, 15 or 16 years when he had his first world title, fight, he lost to Roy Jones. It was his second shot, and he was fighting, what the hell was the guy's name? He beat the hell out of him in a rematch. Segundo Mercado. And they were fighting down basically Mercado's Ecuador, his home country. They really treated Hopkins bad down there. You know, we got there 3 days before the fight, didn't get adjusted to the, you know, high elevation. They gave him, like, they said the gym they let him train in had, like, rat shit all over it. It was just a mess. And, you know, Hopkins ended up rising from two knockdowns, and he beat Mercado pretty good, but he got a draw. Would you get a draw in the other guy's hometown in another country, you probably won 10 of the 12 rounds. They fought in the rematch, and Hopkins just destroyed him. They fought in Maryland, and he knocked him out in 7 rounds. But he didn't want to fight any more out of the country. He hasn't since. But now, you know, he's going up to Canada because he's getting a good chunk of change for this. Well, here's the problem. As I said last week, Bernard Hopkins is a great fighter, but he's not what he was 8, 9, 10 years ago. He's not what he was 15 years ago. He's a very, you know, patient fighter now. He picks his spots. A lot of clinching, a lot of ugly fighting in there. You know, he tries to be more crafty than anything. And here's what's going to be scary. You got a young guy in there. He's 26, 27 years old. I mean, this guy was 10 years old when Hopkins was, you know, fighting for his world title. Hmm. And now, you know, Hopkins is challenging him for his title. Here's the problem. If Hopkins doesn't dominate this fight and fight aggressively and really take this guy out, he's not going to win. He's going to really have to dominate. If the fight's close and there are a lot of rounds like, oh, ho-hum, this round wasn't exciting, it's going to the other fighter. That's just the nature of the beast, Jean Pascal. It's going to Pascal. No other way around it.
We'll talk more about that later. We've got to get a guest on.
Yeah, I'm pulling for Hopkins to win, but I see him losing a close bullshit decision.
Well, we're going to get our guest, John Cosmo, on here. We'll pick up that conversation. Back number.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 310592.
Whoa.
It's not available.
We don't need a broadcast.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may have.
Let's not record a message. You have a backup number here somewhere. Backup. And as we mentioned earlier, just like to mention again, he's John Cosmo. He's working on a documentary, or he just finished one. We'll have to ask him whether it's in the can or not. On Lou Duva, big time boxing promoter.
Hello, we are not available now.
Nothing's working. What's going on?
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 310-592-9134 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
John, this is Rebel Rails and Rich here. We're trying to get you for the interview for Fight News Unlimited. Seems like you're not picking up your phone. So we're going to have to try to call back in 5 minutes here. We're live, so hopefully we can get you next time we call. So we'll give it another try in a few minutes. So there you go. I guess it's too busy for us. So. Must be out on the town. It's down there in New York City, I think it's where he calls home. But it gives us a chance to get back to some of the upcoming boxing matches tomorrow night. It's a big night for boxing, actually. Don King's got a card going on. And speaking of Don King, I don't know if you heard, but he just got busted at the airport somewhere trying to bring ammo on the plane. Different guns. I don't know what the heck his problem is, but yeah, it was like one type of ammo is for a 357 Magnum, and the other was for something smaller, I guess. But geez, what do you need all that ammo for in the first place? Why would you bring it on a plane? Anyway, I don't know if he's going to do time for that or whatever. I'm sure he's just going to get a slap on the wrist. But this is going to be in Florida, this card, at the American Airlines Arena in Miami. We got Tavoris Cloud fighting for the IBF light heavyweight title. He's 21-0 with 18 knockouts, fighting Fulgencio Zuniga. 24-2, 21 knockouts, one draw at light heavyweight. We also have Odlenier Solis at heavyweight, 16-0, 12 knockouts, fighting Ray Austin, 28-4 with 4 draws and 18 knockouts. And a name I'm sure you're familiar with, middleweight Ricardo Mayorga is fighting, 28-7, 1 draw, 22 knockouts, and he's fighting Michael Walker, 19-5, 2 draws and 12 knockouts. All around, this is a pretty stacked card. We even got a female title on the line. Eileen Olszewski, 6-2, 2 draws, fighting Anastasia Tokhtalova, who's 13-10, with 2 knockouts. This is for the WIBA flyweight title and the Global Boxing Union female flyweight title. Pretty interesting card there. All around. And last week we were actually talking about this guy, Travis Kaufman, fighting Ross Thompson in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, the Doubletree Hotel. As far as that from you, Monroeville.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably in the Pittsburgh suburb.
And an old friend of ours is fighting the old TBA on that card, Rayco Saunders. Guy wrote an article about way back when. He's 20-12 with 2 draws, 8 knockouts. It's been a while since I've seen his name even. And also Sean Porter, 17-0 with 13 knockouts. I think we've had him on as a guest, actually.
Sean Porter?
Yeah.
We had Sean Porter off. Probably last February or so.
Yeah. So he's fighting, too, in this card, TBA. But Kaufman's fighting Ross Thompson, 27-14, with 17 knockouts, 3 draws. And the main event is Jesse Lubosch, 13-0, with 8 knockouts at welterweight, fighting Harrison Quello, 20-13, with 15 knockouts, 3 draws. Let's see. Ooh, here we got fight in Argentina. Looks interesting here at light flyweight. I didn't even know there was a light flyweight.
Junior flyweight would be 108.
Well, this is a 12-round light flyweight fight between Luis Alberto Lazarte 48-9 with one draw, 18 knockouts, fighting Ulysses Solis, 32-2 with two draws, 21 knockouts. Pretty interesting. And of course, we talked about this fight in Quebec between Jean Pascal, 26-1 with 16 knockouts, fighting Bernard Hopkins, 51-5 with 32 knockouts and one draw. And that's for the IBO and WBC light heavyweight titles. The other card doesn't look that great, but there is one interesting fight here. Paulie Malignaggi is fighting Michael Lozada, welterweight. Malignaggi's got a record of 27-4, five knockouts. Lozada is 36-6 with 29 knockouts, one draw. That actually should probably be a pretty good fight. Not much else there on the card that looks that appealing, though. A lot of mismatches. Let's see what else we got. Marco Huck is fighting this Saturday in Germany, in Berlin, cruiserweight. 30-1 with 23 knockouts, fighting for the WBO cruiserweight title against Denis Lebedev, who's 21-0, 16 knockouts. Should be a good fight. Also, another cruiserweight fight on here. It's pretty interesting. We got Juan Pablo Hernandez, who's 22-1. 11 knockouts, fighting Ali Ismailov, 18-3 with 13 knockouts, one draw. And if that's not enough for you, we have Alexander Povetkin at heavyweight, 20-0 with 15 knockouts, fighting Nikolai Firtha, who was 19-7, one draw, eight knockouts. So that's a pretty good card for Germany, anyway. Sometimes overseas they have a lot of the female fights leading off the card. It's way more popular over there. Jorge Arce is fighting in Mexico on Saturday as well. 55-6, 42 knockouts, two draws. Fighting Adolfo Ramos, 18-10, 10 knockouts, one draw. Nothing really spectacular on that card. Then we got another fight in Mexico on Saturday. Somebody's O's got to go for the WBC Silver Light Flyweight title. Pedro Guevara, 13-0, nine knockouts, fighting Gabriel Mendoza, 10-0, nine knockouts. Minimum weight title for the World Boxing Federation is also on the line. That card, Manuel Jimenez, 9-0 with 3 knockouts, fighting Luis Carrillo, 10-2 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw. And Eric Morales is on this card. 50-6, 35 knockouts, fighting Francisco Lorenzo, 35-8 with 16 knockouts for the WBC Silver Light Welterweight title. It's actually.
Still fighting. I mean, obviously, the guy's very much shop worn. And, he still wants to go for world titles and everything, which I guess is the reason of staying in the game. But the last fight he had with Manny Pacquiao a couple of years ago was absolutely brutally horrendous. It was to the point of almost painful to watch. Actually, both good fights are painful to watch. Well, they fought three times. Morales got that first win. Now it's the fight where Freddie Roach said that Pacquiao gave the blood a couple of days beforehand and he never had his full strength back. But I think that fight had more to do with Pacquiao getting cut severely around his one eye and really being hampered by the blood. And Morales won that fight. Very close decision. But their second fight, Pacquiao, viciously beat him, stopped him in 10 rounds. And then the third fight wasn't even competitive. I mean, it was I've seen three rounds with the guy hitting a heavy bag more competitive than that fight was. And personally, I'd like to see Eric Morales, you know, enjoy his retirement. I mean, he's been in a lot of great fights, the fight with Ferreira, the fight with Pacquiao. I mean, he fought, you know, he's a tough Mexican fighter, and he fought that way. You know, there was no boxing to his game. It was, you know, he versus you, let the better man win. You know, he's great for a long time. He's no longer great, and he's taking a lot of punches. And not a guy you want to see get hurt or, you know, end up with a debilitating injury.
Right. Well, let's try our guest again before we finish that out. We'll get to that. Rest of the fights later. See if we can get John Kozmov. See, he got the memo.
Hold on. Hello?
Hello, John.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Fine, how are you?
Good. We also have Tony the Tornado Pinnacal on the line.
Hey, what's
hey,
up?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Not too much.
So we've been talking about your documentary project here with Lou Duva, and we had him on
before.
So just tell us a little bit about that whole project, how you got involved, and what it's all about.
Are we live right now?
We are live.
Oh, we are live. Okay, you guys kind of caught me off guard a little bit. I'm like, we're live now, guys. How we doing? The Lou Duva documentary, actually was an advisor to a fighter, Vivian Harris, vicious uh-huh. Vivian Harris. He's a two-time world champion. And his trainer was Tommy Brooks. And Tommy Brooks is married to Donna Duva Brooks, who Donna is Lou's daughter.
Right.
So for the past couple years, I kind of dabbled in the boxing industry. And I was in the film business, and me and Lou hooked up. And, you know, just the more I was around the guy and heard his story, you know, I was very intrigued. I mean, he was Rocky Marciano's partner. And, you know, he hung out with Joe DiMaggio. You know, Tom Cruise used to come to all his fights in Jersey. You know, his father used to bring all his fights when he was a young kid. You know, Christian Brinkley was a photographer at all his fights. So this, you know, this guy had a lot of history behind him.
Yeah, there's a couple things that we didn't hear about when we interviewed him. He's got, he likes to talk more about the fighters that he's dealt with than himself, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, he had a trucking company. All his workers were fighters,
uh-huh.
which is interesting. So he was kind of a blue-collar guy, and he, you know, I guess in 84 was when he really hit it big, you know, as far as he got notoriety when he coached the Olympic team. And he, you know, he had Evander, he had Tyrone Biggs, Pernell Whitaker, Mark Breland, you know. That was a major, you know, two of those are, you know, breaks, you know, so very, and he's 88 now, still full of energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we actually, you know.
When we got to interview Lou last year, I mean, it was, you know, a dream come true for me, because I've been, in the boxing business for a number of years. As a fighter, I do some coaching, I do some training now, and obviously I do the reporting end of it, as we're doing tonight. The first fight my dad really took me to was back in 1992. He took me to one when I was real small, but I was too small to remember it. But the first one I really went to was 1992 down in Atlantic City, and it was Michael Moore versus Burt Cooper. And it was on a pay-per-view. Well, where our seats were was only a few rows away from where, like, they had the, you know, booth set up where the guys were sitting above the arena like they used to do on pay-per-view. And they were interviewing Lou Duva up there, and one of Lou's fighters, Meldrick Taylor, who was one of his great fighters, unfortunately had a very short career because he fought too many wars. Meldrick had just lost to Terry Norris probably about a week prior. And I was, you know, sitting there, I'm 15 years old, and there was a couple of guys sitting next to me, a little older than me, I'll say they maybe were like 16, 17, and we were trying to get Lou's attention and say, Lou, why'd you let Meldrick fight Terry Norris and get beat like that?
come on, Lou. And Lou was pretending like he couldn't hear what we were asking him. You know he could, but he was like, what? What are you saying? And so when we got Lou on the air about a year and a half ago, the first thing I said to him, I said, Lou, I've been dying to ask you this for 14 years now. 19, or actually longer than that. It was, I'm like, Lou, I've been dying to ask you this for 17 years. Why'd you let Melvin Taylor fight Terry Norrison get beat like that? You wouldn't answer me in Atlantic City that night. And he had a really good laugh about it. But just talk about a guy who was 87 years old when we interviewed him. And I like to pride myself to really know a lot of boxing history. And it was one of the fights, I forget who it was. It was one of Lou's fighters, and I mentioned something about the fight. And he corrected me and said, oh, no, you had the score wrong. It wasn't this, it was this. And I was like, and I pulled up my boxer and said, geez, he's right. I said, here's a guy that's managed so many world champions and been in the corner of so many great fights on pay-per-view and fight of the year candidates, and he can remember the scorecard of a title fight from 20 years ago. I'm like, damn, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's definitely pretty strong. I mean, we asked him, we were like, you know, Lou, what does it feel like to be a legend? And he's like, it feels pretty good until I get home. My daughter asked me to take out the garbage. So that's pretty, you know, he's still got a little wit about him, you know. I thought that was very classic when he said that to him.
Yeah.
So.
I'll tell you, like I said, for years, you know, because when I really started getting into boxing, I remember watching a lot of the fights in the late 70s, early 80s with my dad when it was the glory days, still the heavyweight division, and then going into the 80s when you had the Fab Four of, you know, Leonard, Hearns, Hagler, Duran, all those great guys. You had all the great action TV fighters on CBS and ABC every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. I remember watching all them fights with my dad, and then a couple years later, really getting back into it in the late 80s with the emergence of Mike Tyson, and the other guys like Vinny Pazienza, who was one of Lou's proteges early in his career. And the things I always remember about Lou, Lou was a feisty guy. He's a short little Italian guy, and, you know, fiery as can be. And I'll never forget the time that Vinny Paz was fighting Roger Mayweather. And this was just a precursor of a guy, Mayweather, who I just do not like because of his lack of sportsmanship and class. After the fight was over, he had, you know, really fought a dirty fight. And after the final bell rang and Lou was mad, Roger sucker punched him and knocked Lou down. Lou was 60-some years old at the time, maybe almost 70, and he jumped right back up and was right back in his face and had to be restrained. I'm like, man, that's one tough SOB. And then you had the incident in Madison Square Garden with the Bergalata fight. When the riot breaks out, I remember the announcer saying, oh my God, Lou's collapsed and they're carrying him out on a stretcher and they almost dropped him. And there he was back, you know, a few months later, welcome to Galata again, feisty as ever.
Yeah. Great guy. I mean, we did an event for the first time at Mohica Castle. I don't know if you guys heard that event with Nick Garone this past May. And we had, you know, some pretty good fights. We had Michael Graham fight somebody in the co-main event. And in addition, we had Lou come there for his 80th birthday and had all the guys from 84 Olympic team, whatever. So it's a pretty good event. So we're looking to actually do that again this coming year, possibly some type of theme like that in the boxing genre, because nobody thought there would be a fight at the castle, if you guys are familiar with Ohika Castle.
I haven't heard of it myself, but
But that kind of kicked off the thing with Lou, and you know his family are kind of tied to the boxing industry. So it's you know, hopefully the industry is going to come back to kind of some old school days. You know, where we have some good heavyweights and lightweights in certain divisions.
Well, we were just talking about earlier, you know. Kind of proves all these people wrong saying that boxing's dead because you got all these movies coming out. You know, we got Mark Wahlberg playing Mickey Ward. Eminem's going to be coming out with a movie called Southpaw. And your documentary now, is that all done and finished? Is it coming out?
It's not done. We actually have I'll tell you another part of that. This project is we have Tony Danza is attached to do the voiceover.
Oh, cool.
So we're very excited about that. And actually, Lou trained Tony Danza.
Oh, I didn't
know. Before he's an actor or whatever. So Danza's very excited about the project. He'll do anything for Lou. And he's like, whatever Lou needs, I'll do. So we're very excited about having Tony Danza on board with the shows he's got out right now.
Cool, very cool. So what's the deal with, when's it going to be finished and where is it going to be seen? Where can we see it?
Well, we're looking to have it finished by May of next year. And then, we're in contact with HBO. And, we may do like a world premiere at maybe Ohika Castle as a venue because this is where this kind of started. So, if we do a premiere there, and then hopefully we can get it aired on HBO. And, after the success of this Vince Lombardi documentary, kind of even gave me more inspiration because, Vince Lombardi was from New Jersey. He was born in Little Italy, but he grew up in Patterson, so he's kind of a New Jersey guy, too. So it was kind of gave me some inspiration because if we can pull off that feel that the Vince Lombardi documentary had, I think this will be a great documentary.
Yeah, it's actually interesting you mentioned that because when I actually went to Air Force Academy my freshman year in college, and that's where I first boxed competitively. And my coach gave me the tape of my fights before I left, and he had a quote on there from Vince Lombardi. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was something to the effect of, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how you get back up.
Yeah, right.
So it was very applicable to boxing.
Cool.
But yeah, I have seen a lot about that that documentary.
Yeah, it's on HBO now, man. I was very when I watched it, I was very inspired. Like I said, if we pull off that feel, it was kind of our theme for the documentary with Lou is, you see the streets of Patterson. The grungy streets of Patterson. We went and filmed in some old gyms there, in Patterson. We went and filmed, I don't know if you know this about Lewis. He put up a statue of Lou Costello in the middle of Patterson, a bronze statue that Lou put up in the middle of Patterson. So we went and filmed part of that, which was kind of cool. And so kind of having that theme of the grunge of Patterson, to his 88th birthday at Ohika Castle, 109,000 square feet residence, but then tell a story in between those two bookends, about his life and what happened in his career. Because he did a lot of stuff that I don't think people really know about.
Oh, yeah. Just some of the stories he told us about Rocky Marciano were amazing, and I'm sure not a lot of people have heard them. But
supposedly he was the last person to talk to Rocky before he got on that plane.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Before he died.
That was funny. When you talk about his quick wit, I asked him, who is the best boxer out there today that you like watching? And he said, Christy Martin.
Oh, really?
She could beat some of the guys out there today.
That's funny.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Very funny.
Full of stories. And he told us, actually one of the best stories that I think I remember from the interview was he told us about how when Rocky Marciano fought Joe Louis, and Joe Louis came back to the dressing room and they were hugging each other and crying, and it was just a very emotional moment. And Rocky had been worried that, he hurt him bad, and Joe came in and thanked him and, was appreciative of the whole deal and that just that he would agree to fight him in the first place, he knocked me out, but that's okay. And, it's a real good moment. And here's Rocky Marciano, is one of his idols growing up. So,
yeah,
That was huge. And
yeah.
Joe was, I mean, Lou was pretty adamant that there's nobody here in this day and age in boxing and heavyweight division that even could hold a candle to Rocky. So, you know, he had a lot of respect for him.
Remember what he, remember when we were asking about the heavyweight division? And he asked, because we said to him, like, what do you think about today's heavyweights? He said, can you go dig up Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano? And they'd still probably beat the Klitschko's and whoever else you got out there.
Yeah, the you said, they couldn't carry his bags.
That's funny.
But, John, tell us a little bit about, you know, how do you get into actually, you know, you talked about Vivian Harris. How did you get into boxing in the first place?
You know what? I was in L.A. I was in Los Angeles for 5.5 years. And I kind of helped brand Travis Pastrana. My production company was like one of the top production companies at Red Bull. And Travis was one of the biggest athletes at Red Bull. And I had some pretty good run with Travis and all those guys, and Kerry Hart and all those guys. And I don't know, I got tired of hearing motorcycles. And I said, I want to produce films. So I started raising money for feature films, developed a script with Nick Cassavetes. And then my wife got tired of the traffic in L.A., so we came back to New York. So I came back to New York on the East Coast, and a buddy of mine was like, this guy is a boxer. He wants to do a documentary about his life. One thing led to another. I met Vivian, and you know, we kind of hit it off or whatever. And you know, the more I talked to him, and the more he listened to me, I think he saw some good business sense with me, which I don't think he's really ever had. So some of the good business sense in the boxing business, you kind of, where certain people you kind of miss. So we kind of hooked up, even though Vivian's kind of a head case, but, you know, he's a great specimen, a great talent. And, you know, his past couple fights, if he just had more confidence, he would probably fare a lot better against some of these guys. But, you know, we hit it off, and, you know, one thing led to another. And here we are today. I mean, this kind of a small world in some sense, you know.
Mm-hmm. So were you the one behind the video of Travis Pastrana jumping out of the airplane without a parachute?
Yeah. You know, the one at the Grand Canyon. You know, I did Baja Diaries. I did the Enduro at Erzberg, the hardest race in the world in the Austrian Alps. And then I did a thing in Prague. But I guess Baja Diaries got the biggest accolades because it's, you know, it's the 1,000-mile race in the tip of Baja, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that kind of took him to a point where they started looking at his material, you know, and Nitro Circus, which we were part of. They started looking at, you know, more mainstream stuff for him because, I mean, we were selling 100,000, 200,000 DVDs, you know. And this guy wasn't even mainstream. He was just the biggest action sports star in the business. You know, that's a lot, you know, to be selling independently. So then that, you know, kind of helped get to that point. And then when he got started hearing motorcycles, next thing I know, he's signing with everybody. MTV, you know, Nitro Circus went on MTV. Now Johnny Knoxville is executive producer, which I'm just using his name. So it kind of took its leg of its own, you know, to some extent. So
I don't know if you've seen it, but there's actually a pretty interesting documentary going on right now. It's like an internet deal called White Collar Brawler. And it's at whitecollarbrawler.com. These guys are actually from the techie world, and they decided they wanted some excitement in their lives. So they put together this whole video series. They're going to fight each other tomorrow, actually. They've done 22 episodes, I think, of this documentary, and just started from scratch. They didn't know anything about boxing, and now they're going to be fighting each other. So, pretty interesting.
But really nice.
I bet you'd like that.
Cool.
We actually had the guys.
Well, I'm kind of all over the place. I'm a businessman. I mean, but being an athlete, I think, kind of, I'm watching. I love boxing, so being an athlete and loving boxing, you know, when I met these guys, I wanted me to get involved, you know, and I got more involved, and it's kind of cool. It's a very nostalgic, you know, sport, you know, with a lot of history. You know, so there's a lot of, you know, being a filmmaker, there's a lot of stories you can tell.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, wherever you go, if you've ever boxed yourself, you know, and you tell people, oh, yeah, I used to box, you know, you just automatically get respect, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I was actually telling a few stories today. I was at my regular job today talking to actually one of my customers who has a business out in California. You know, I'm from Philadelphia, but their billing office is California, and when the woman called in, you know, oh, hey, how you doing? You're trying to make conversation. I said, I'm sure your weather out there is a lot nicer than it is right here right now. We're hitting the 20s and all that. And she was like, oh, I'm originally from Michigan. I'm like, okay, I say no more because I know how bad Michigan is. But I'm, you know, making small talk, and she was talking about being in California and making treks to Reno, Nevada. I said, oh, Reno. I said, okay. You know, I had fought out there when I was in, you know, a collegiate amateur. And I fought in the East-West Classic. So the first thing I was doing, I was just, you know, telling her a funny story. I said, well, I was there back in 1998, East-West Classic. And I said, these are the days before digital cameras became real popular. And, you know, I'm out there. I can't wait. It's a great trip. And we're walking into the arena, and there's a huge line waiting to get in. And it was only a couple thousand seats. So, I mean, and it looked like this place was going to be packed to the gills. So I'm walking in. I had a customized jacket with my name on it, and this some black guy came up to me and he goes, hey, man, how you doing? I'm talking to him. And I'm like, he looks familiar, but I don't know who he is. But I'm small talking him. And he's like, hey, man, can I get in your entrance? I'm like, no, man, it's the fighter's entrance. I can't let you in. Okay, I'll see you inside, buddy. Good luck. And I said, okay, yeah, buddy, I'll see you tonight. And I'm like, this guy's never going to get in the lines too long. And I go in the back of the locker room, and, you know, we just put on a warm-up here, and we were going out for the introductions with our opponents. Not only was this guy in there, he had a private table. They were bringing him drinks. People were coming up for autographs. I don't know who this guy is, but he's waving to me, yeah, go get him. So the fight's over, and I'm leaving the arena. He comes up to me again. He's like, hey, man, you did great tonight. They ripped you off. And, so we took a photo together. So I'm like, I got to know who this guy is. I have a bad roll of film in my camera. 12.5 years later, I'm still telling the story because I don't know who the hell this guy was. But he was somebody. but it's all cool stuff like that. And like the boxing gyms and the stories, you know, you can tell. I tell Rich this one all the time. I used to train at a rec center in South Philadelphia. It was a tough area, you know, and that's how I earned my stripes. You know, and to be called a Philly fighter was an honor, and it was a privilege. And you just didn't get it. You had to earn it. And so I had been down there about a year and a half at the time, and I was in college, and it didn't matter because he was using our gym, but he had it closed while he was there. Mike Tyson was fighting in Philadelphia, and he was supposed to come in 7 days before the fight and use one gym. He came in 14 days before the fight and would bounce from gym to gym to stay ahead of, like, you know, the media, and he used our gym a couple days, and he left equipment there for all the guys. So, yeah, I got to use Mike Tyson's jump rope and Mike Tyson's, you know, the board, you know, actual plank that he would skip on. I was like, damn, because that's just the camaraderie in the boxing field. And that's why I think I love it more than any other sport ever created.
Well, it's funny you say that about Tyson. Is like Vivian and, I guess, Vivian and Zap Judah and all those guys kind of came up in the same camp. And Vivian used to tell me stories where Tyson would be a chaperone for all the young guys that are coming up in the business. And him, Zab, and I don't know, there's several other guys, I can't remember the name, but so they'd be out in Vegas, and Tyson would always have them in by 11 o'clock. He would take all the young guys in by 11 o'clock, and then he would go back out. Unless you got the young guys home, and so that's kind of a cool story, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't picture Mike Tyson as a good chaperone for anybody.
Yeah, right? That's a true story, though.
That's funny.
That's definitely a true story. And then he was telling me one thing about with Tyson, and him and Tyson were together, and Jay-Z's calling Tyson. Because when Tyson was, or Jay-Z was on the run, he wanted to stay at Tyson's house in Las Vegas. I can't repeat the conversation, but it was. He just said it was pretty interesting, you know.
Right.
Something like Jay-Z to be calling Tyson to stay in his house in Las Vegas.
So get back to Lou Duva. What was the most interesting thing you learned about him during this whole process of doing the documentary?
I mean, he's just, I guess, an ordinary guy. I mean, very humble. You know, just a normal guy. You know, you never, being with him, you never think someone, you know, would have that type of history. You know, sitting with him. If you didn't know him or didn't know his name, and you just met him, you had no idea the guy had done what he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just down to earth. When I did my visit of Hika, when Evander and all these guys came in, Pernell and all these guys came in, I was like walking by, and he pointed to me, and he's like, "That's the boss right there." So I just thought that was, I thought that was pretty cool. Lou Dude was like, "Hey, if you guys do anything, that's the boss." He's telling Evander and Pernell that. So I was like, that felt kind of strange, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, he actually in the interview with us said that Evander was probably the best fighter he ever worked with.
He's repeated that to me too. He said Evander is the best one ever. He's a go-getter. You know, went out there and did what he's told. You know, didn't ask any questions. You know, he said he was probably the best he ever trained and managed.
He's still trying to be the best.
Exactly. He's still fighting, you know. He looked great when we did our event at Odico this past year. I mean, he looked great. I mean, he's still shredded. I mean, he doesn't look 47.
Right.
You know, he looked good.
Yeah, he's still trying to go out on top, too. He's trying to get a shot at the title. I don't know if that's...
Well, that would be very interesting. I don't know, you know. Who's he going to fight? Klitschko?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
Klitschko. He doesn't have good odds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That would definitely be interesting.
Yeah, it was a little easier, I think, for George Foreman. He ended up getting the title against Michael Moore there, who was a smaller guy than he was at the time. But nowadays,
you know,
it seems impossible for
him. I know Tommy pretty well. Huh?
It just seems impossible for anybody to beat these Russian guys, you know?
Klitschko's got that jab.
Right, yeah.
He keeps everybody off of him. He just works that damn elbow, and that jab's pretty tough to beat. You know? I don't know. Hopefully there will be a good heavyweight coming up. You know, it'd be good to see another Tyson. Find another Tyson out of Brooklyn somewhere. You know? There's hopefully there's some guy out there like that. You never know. Maybe, you know, everything has a cycle, right?
Right, yeah. Well, one thing that, you know, people kind of forget about Tyson is he had some really good defense, too. And it seems like nowadays, you know, you got more of these guys going with the flashy, hands-down style. But one thing that was always good about Tyson is he when he wasn't punching, he always had his hands right on his chin, like literally on his chin, both hands. And, you know, I think that's just part of the evolution of the sport. These guys in Europe and Russia and stuff, they're more defensive than a lot of American guys now because they just do it more orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Floyd Mayweather, you know, he uses the shoulder instead of his arm and just does all the flashy stuff, and kids try to imitate that as they're coming up.
You know, speaking of Floyd Mayweather, I kind of have a story about him, too.
Go ahead.
you know, me being in L.A., I used to go to Roosevelt. So I think the last night, a couple of days, it was like 4 days before the Mayweather fight. Right? So I go to Roosevelt. With this comedian guy, he took pictures with him. You must be important.
Yeah.
And we all start laughing. He says, "I'm Floyd Mayweather." You know, I was like, "What's up, man?" You know, obviously I knew who he was. A comedian guy, I didn't really know who he was. He's just kind of that Hollywood guy. But it was cool. And he was like, and my comedian friend was like, "Hey, this is a producer right here." He says, "You know, if you want to do something, let me know." And he grabbed my phone and put his cell phone number in my phone. Floyd Mayweather. We're like, you know, what's up? You know, because he liked the Twins.
Yeah.
We were talking and whatever. And he's like, "This is my last fight. This is my last fight. I'm done. I'm retiring." You know, how many years ago was that? Was it 07, 08?
Yeah.
You know, when that was his last fight. But I called him a couple times after that. From the Roosevelt Hotel, and talked to him a few times about what, you know, he gave me his number because he wanted to, he says, "I'm retiring, I want to act."
Huh.
So he's like, that's kind of why he gave me his number, because he wanted back. And I talked to him a couple times about some stuff, some gigs, possibly, you know, acting or whatever. And then he changed his cell phone number and never talked to him again. But that's kind of my... Yeah.
Did a documentary about him today. It might have to be from behind bars. You know, not like he's going to love legal trouble. I don't know what.
You really think it's going to happen? Come on.
He could go to jail. And that's just some pretty serious stuff. You know, threatening his wife and his kids. And
but it went from grand larceny to threatening his wife and kid. I mean. Come on, I mean, if they went from grand larceny to threatening his wife and kid, I mean, how much is that being put out by her publicist or something, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know. You never know. I mean, the press manipulates a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of people out to get him, too, you know? And there was a security guard there a couple weeks ago who came out and said he was poked in the chest or something because he tried to get Floyd to stop letting people park all over the street there in this gated community where he lives in Vegas. And there's another guy that had a beef with him at a skating rink, and now he claims that Floyd saw him on the highway, tried to run him off the road. You know, so it sounds like he's just got a lot of enemies out there. You know, he knows how to piss people off.
Well, if you have money, I mean, if you have money and you're Floyd Mayweather, people are going to take shots at you.
Right.
You know, I'm sure. You know, half of it's probably bullshit, and half of it is probably real. You never know, you know? I mean, if you got money, people are going to take shots at you, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the entertainment world, you know? You never know.
Exactly.
Speaking
as a business, what is the thing that you enjoy most about doing what you do? What do you love most about your job, I guess?
Well, I think it's just, you know, waking up every day and being excited about getting out of bed. You know, if you get out of bed every day, you're excited about what you're doing. You know, I guess I'm more of a business person, but I still have a lot of creative, so seeing the business and the creative, you know, the creative part really inspires me. If you can create something that people respond to, I think is a very big achievement, you know, whether you make money or not. If you can get people to respond to something you created, that's pretty strong.
Right. Well, unfortunately, my career, people respond to me by suing me. My stories are so...
What is that?
Well, I actually have a pretty big story. I'd love to make a documentary out of it someday, but I got sued for $25 million for writing about the sponsor of the UFC, Zions. and they're now in bankruptcy, and it's been 4 years that they've been trying to sue me. And now they went into bankruptcy, and the trustee is settling with me. Coming up this month, I'm supposed to be getting the first installment of the settlement, but I still have a $150 million portion of the case that's moving forward on my behalf for the shareholders that were screwed over by the bankruptcy. But I'm suing the Fertitta brothers and all kinds of people who were involved in the bankruptcy. There's all kinds of casino connections. There's worldwide money laundering. Just unbelievable amount of different
angles. That's all in your book?
Well, I haven't written the book yet. I haven't really tried to put a manuscript together even because I've got to get the legal stuff out of the way. But it's winding down now. And I have a website called ZionSucks.com. And if you do a search for Zion, it comes up like number 5 on a Google search for Zion. So they actually just hired a guy over at Zion. I have some people that still talk to some guys on the inside there. And they told me they hired a guy for $25,000 just to get my site off the first page of Google. But I got it rigged up so that they can't do it. You know, there's no way.
It's
that popular, and I did a couple tweaks so that, you know, it's always going to either stay there or even go up a spot the way I'm marketing.
Yeah.
But I was just, you know, just I actually just had a MySpace. I didn't even have a website when I started all this. And I had some guy contact me with all this inside stuff about what was going on, big corruption. And the guy that started Zions was a convicted felon. And he was going around telling everybody, oh, we're going to bring it public. And there's no way a guy can bring a company public when he's a convicted felon. It just doesn't happen. So I started writing about it, and then they claimed that because of my stories, they lost $25 million worth of potential investments. And the next thing you know, I'm fighting back. I decided to be my own attorney. And the next thing you know, I got a settlement offer, you know, 4 years later almost. It'll be 4 years of July since they started suing me. This is back in 2006. I ended up getting a website and starting Fight News Unlimited based on that little MySpace page. And they tried to take down the MySpace page like 3 different times, and I just kept having to rebuild it. And
I remember that.
Yeah, it was just nuts. And,
but,
you know, I just kept fighting.
Where are you guys at?
I'm actually in New England, up in New Hampshire. Tony's in Philadelphia. And it's just basically, you know, completely independent. I get a lot of press releases. Tony's one of my only writers. It's all volunteer.
Yeah, but I don't get to write much anymore because my damn job has me booked up all the time. So basically, my only participation in the site is when there's a really big fight coming up, like the Pacquiao-Margarito fight a few weeks ago, or Mayweather-Mosey. The really, really, really big fights. I write an in-depth preview prediction on them, and I think part of the reason I enjoy doing that is I analyze the guy's strengths, weaknesses, styles, and I calculate a result of what will happen, and I'm usually pretty on. And I really like that. But like I said, my job has to be
Do you have an online TV show?
Yeah, actually, when I saw that White Collar Brawler show, I came up with an idea myself that I was going to do something like, you know, how to lose 30 pounds in 30 days or something and just do crazy boxing workouts. Then I there's actually a thing that I got involved with last year called Battle of the Badges. And it's New York Fire Department versus New England Law Enforcement. And they actually almost called me to be on the card because I was helping out with the promotion and stuff. I set up a website for these guys, and I was real, real good friends with the promoter. And so they said, well, we might need you, you know, so you got to stay ready. And I was ready, but they didn't need me. So this year, it's going to actually, next year on the 23rd of April, they're going to have another one. So I'm going to do some kind of YouTube thing, a series of videos, training, getting ready, sort of like White Collar Brawler. But those guys, I mean, they're techies, so they got every angle covered. They got advertising even, and sponsors, and just the whole works. my big problem is I'm not a business guy, you know. I'm mostly creative, and I do everything myself, you know. So when it comes down to the business, you know, I need some help and some of the technical stuff even though I'm a webmaster. I don't know all the Flash and you know, that sort of thing. It's above my pay grade, I guess. But I'll fix
How many listeners you got?
Well, it varies. I mean, we get anywhere from 30 to 300, depending on how well we promote it per night. But then it gets archived, and people can see it in the archive portion whenever they want. So that's what's nice about having the internet radio. It's not just a one-time thing.
And yeah.
I have a podcast page, too, where I put some of the interviews up separately from the whole show. But we do the show basically every week. We never miss a show. Shows you we have some passion for it. We work for free.
Well, you build on something like this, you know, and keep going, you know, it'll turn into something.
Right.
You know, you never know in this business. You know, it's persistence.
Exactly.
Makes consistency, you're right, you know. So
yeah, it's been fun. Just basically getting the word out there. I think we've just, a couple months ago, we hit our 10,000th post on the blog in just a few years. And every now and then, you know, I'll get a Google alert and my story will be in it and, you know, some stuff like that. And just back in 2004, I actually worked for a newspaper and
yeah,
I used to get involved in certain stories that my editors would be like, well, you're going to get sued if you write about that. And I used to laugh them off. You know, now I know it's true. But, you know, just to be able to get involved in that and then to learn how to be my own lawyer was an experience in itself. And it just opened up so many different avenues of creativity for something in the future once I get that out of the way. But the bottom line is just, you know, being independent. Like a lot of people think, oh, you got to get the day job and, you know, that's the only way you're going to be able to survive as a writer. But with the internet, it really empowers you to go out there and do your own thing. If you know how to use it the right way, like especially the social networks, you can market everything on your social networks for free. People spend thousands of dollars in Google ads and stuff like that. You don't even have to. If you know how to work the social networks, you can get these little auto bots for like $20 for a download. And they do it. It does everything for you. You market like crazy. So I perfected that from the beginning, and I get like 50,000 hits a day on the website on average without really even doing much. So, you know, if I had a little bit of a business sense, then I'd probably be making a lot more money at it. But unfortunately, I'm like one of those type of people that's real minimalist. I just, you know, I just need enough to get by. And I don't really, I'm not greedy about it. I don't like to pile up wealth, even though it would be nice. Just not my thing, you know. But anyway. So, as far as the documentary, you said that you're trying to approach HBO about it. John?
Did you there?
Yeah, actually, I think we did.
I think you hung up on
you. His cell phone was going in and out, so... We'll try to give him a little...
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic...
Looks like we lost him. Well, unfortunately, we don't get to get a sayonara final thought, but that was John Cosma, and he's got a documentary hopefully going to be coming out on HBO sometime next year. Sounds like you're going to be finishing up probably by the summer next year. It sounded like he was saying May next year. But it was pretty good guests, and you had a lot to talk about, a lot of different avenues of discussion there about boxing and everything. But we got about a half an hour left here, so I'm just going to go back to the boxing schedule, finish out that. I got a mismatch card of the week here. Talk about mismatches. Every fight on this card is a mismatch, it seems like. First of all, we got the WBC Youth Female Bantamweight title on the line in this fight between Zulina Munoz, who's 24-1 with 18 knockouts, 2 draws, and she's fighting Patricia Ordonez, and it's her debut. First fight. How's that for a first fight? You got to fight somebody who's 24-1. It's rough. But also on this card, we got super featherweight Gamaliel Diaz, 23-9 with 13 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Rafael Falcon, who's 0-4, 1 draw. And also we have Carlos Zarate Jr. at lightweight, fighting a 6-rounder. He's 11-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Juan Carlos Martinez, who's 2-7. That does mismatches down there in Mexico. See, oh, here's a mismatch. Big mismatch in Peru on Saturday. Tony Fernandez, 27-0 at super featherweight, 17 knockouts, fighting Wagner Gonzalez, 0-1. Rough stuff. Matt Vanda is also fighting this weekend. He's 43-12 with 23 knockouts. This is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. 10-round super middleweight fight with Phil Williams, who's 11-3, 1 draw, 10 knockouts. What else we got? Takes us into Sunday. That's pretty much it until next week.
Yeah, and next week you should be wearing and rocking and rolling to go. Both on Thursday, so I'm going to try to work the early shift that day with a lot. And then Friday's trip to me, which is good.
Yes, it is good. We're still working on trying to get some more guests. We don't have really definitive guest for next week yet, but I got to remind the publicist for Glenn Johnson that we're supposed to get something with him eventually. But other than that, I do want to tell people that the Ring Girl contest is going on. We finally got that page up for the, now it's going to be the winter Ring Girl contest. And right now, Remy is leading the voting. I think she's got like 300 votes already. I just got the damn page live yesterday. Sure, I got 300 votes. So she's doing well. We're going to actually someday by next year, early next year, the next deadline is actually February 15th. 2011, and then sometime during the month of February, we're going to get another contest going for our calendar. We're going to do a 2012 calendar, and we're going to have a contest of all the past winners who want to participate still. We're going to put the word out to them, and then we're going to submit new pictures, and we're going to have a contest for the cover model. Who's going to be the cover model? So that's going to run pretty much all year, give it a real good run to decide who's going to be the hottest ring girl of all. But this month, actually, I was surprised. You know, usually we have, you know, one girl out of the bunch that the guys from the Jersey Shore would call a grenade. It's, doesn't look that great, and still tries to pass herself off as Cinderella. But this time, not so much. We got every single girl in this contest this month, or this season, we're doing it seasonally now because I'm too lazy, is it's pretty hot. You know, we have 14 contestants, and I even got a bonus the other day. This girl sent me five pictures, and one of them, she's showing everything. So I was like, whoa. Nice pictures. As much as I like to see that, we need to tone it down for the website. So she did. She sent me some replacement shots. But I said, if you want to send me some more, you know, I could hook you up at the top of the voting page. So she did. I'll have to forward those to you. It's pretty hot. But anyway, that's pretty much all I got. I don't know if you have any other final thoughts.
Yeah, go Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, there you go. Did you want to finish your analysis of that, or were you done?
Well, I was pretty much done.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to try to watch that fight, because I know that he hasn't fought in a while, but Bernard's been up there at, like, I think number 3 or 4, pound for pound on BoxRec for months and months. So they obviously think a lot about him. The whole boxing community thinks enough about him to set him up with this title shot. He's number 3 right now. I think, well, no, that's just the light heavyweight title. Pound for pound. 4. He's number 4 on BoxRec. Behind Vladimir Klitschko. So that should be a good fight. Pascal surprised a lot of people. He's had some pretty much good wars. I'm excited to see that. It's one of those boxing matches I will watch. You know, I've been watching more MMA lately than boxing. But until next week, I'm going to sign off. And
sign off for watching NFL football. And
anyway,
I'm going to do my job tomorrow. I'm very excited. But instead, see how brilliant I am. I'm off tomorrow, and I'm going to get up in the morning, do a few things here, do a few things there. I just booked myself to work a 9-hour shift at the freelance tomorrow. Now I'm working 10 hours on Saturday. Hopefully, I'll take Sunday off. They wanted me to work, but it's going to snow. I'm like, fuck that.
People get trees late, huh? They get them this late?
I'll be working. I mean, I sold the first tree on Black Friday at 11:30 in the morning, and right here we sold trees on Christmas Eve. People were coming in, and we didn't have them standing up anymore. We had them laying down. Like, hey, you want to change that one? Yeah, it's $10. We can get the hell out.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I do know of a few people that do the Christmas Eve thing. They get the tree on Christmas Eve. They set it up, then they leave it up for like a month. But I don't know. That's not my thing. Usually, right after Thanksgiving, that weekend or by Monday, gotta get the tree up. It's always good. Change it up a little. Gotta move stuff around, set the tree up. Good times. Well, good luck at the tree lot. Here's to hoping you get
always,
money.
Always. Hey, it's easy money, man.
Good.
All right. Well, till next week.
Adios. And
all right. Hasta la vista, baby.
Much thanks to our guest. Great show. See you next
always.
Week.
Always.